Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org, MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. So we're going to look at a subject that has been on this program a lot over the last 22 years, which is transportation and the state of transportation in our city and across the state. And we have a new governor, a new secretary of transportation. We've been touting and arguing about the purple and red line on this program for a while. They are, to the very least, in jeopardy, or at least where they are being promoted, being created is in jeopardy. There's also questions about how we create systems, like here in Baltimore City, that actually serve the needs of the people. As I said to our guests before we went on the air, that it seems every time we have this conversation that when we look at the planning being done for the future transportation, the voices that are left off that panel, those panels oftentimes, are the very people who actually use the buses and the trains in our communities. We are joined here by Brian O'Malley, who is president and CEO of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. Brian, welcome. Good to have you on the program.
Good morning.
Robin Lewis is an international health professional, sustainability advocate, community leader, and spearheaded the legislative advocacy for improved transit, and a founder and former director of the Red Line, now PAC. Good to have you in the studio with us.
Great to be here, Mark.
Ralph Bennett joins us by phone, president of the Purple Line Now, a 20-year-old advocacy group. Ralph, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Michael McMillan is with us. He's a local 1300 Amalgamated Transit Union Executive Board. Directors, good to have you with us as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And you all can join us here, 410-319-8888. You can log on to our Facebook pages, tweet me at Mark Steiner, write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org. We'd love to hear from you. Many of our guests and many of our listeners take the bus. So join in, 410-319-8888. I mean, a lot of people take the bus that are even are guests on this show, like Dr. Lester Spence from Hopkins and many more. That's how the people get around the city. So let me start here. Let's start for a minute with the red and purple line, if we can. They do seem, given the what the governor said and what he said in this program when he was running for governor, he has questions about whether the state should be spending this money on the red and purple lines and clearly wants to. And the real question is whether there will even be a red line in this proposal. So let's begin. And Robin Lewis, let me let your analysis of this. Start with you.
Thanks so much,
Welcome
Mark.
Welcome to the show.
Great to be here. I love talking transit. It's a great opportunity. As you mentioned, I founded an organization called Red Line Now, the Political Action Committee, to advocate for construction of the Red Line about 4 years ago. The reason that I established this organization is because it seemed at the time, even under Governor O'Malley, who was amenable and supportive of transit infrastructure, it seemed even then that the project might not get funded and might not get built simply for lack of community support. So my organization was committed to generating energy behind a grassroots support movement, and we did that. I'm still a huge advocate of Red Line, and here we are all these years later, and the project still seems to be at risk.
How many years has it been since you've been?
I got involved in Red Line advocacy in 2010 as a volunteer with the station area committees for the Red Line. But I can tell you this. What we tried to do here in Baltimore was modeled after the work that the Purple Line Now group did down in Montgomery and PG counties, and Dr. Bennett could talk to you about that. The point is, transit in the city has been neglected for too long. Baltimore is about to get left behind in the dustbin of history because cities like ours are investing intensely in infrastructure. They're building out streetcars. They're building up subways, light rail. They're investing in highly sophisticated, responsive bus networks. We are being left behind. People who might otherwise want to come here to study and to live and work choose to go elsewhere because other cities are more competitive. They have better transit, and that's what people of the century want.
So let me turn. I heard there was a rally yesterday in Annapolis. Ralph Bennett, you were there?
Yes. Yeah, it was a wonderful event.
So talk a bit about you. I'm going to go to you and Brian to talk about what happened last night. Go ahead.
It was a lobby day. It was organized by the Coalition for Smarter Growth down here. We were delighted to see our colleagues from Baltimore come. Traditional supporters for the Purple Line were there. Support for our project is broad and deep. The legislative delegations are all in. The commercial community, business community is all in as well. And so it was really a kind of celebration of support for the project. It was great. But on the other hand, we were preaching to the choir. And the choir was numerous and harmonious and loud. But at the same moment, our real task is to encourage the governor to make decisions about these two projects that move them forward, because both of them need to keep up the momentum they have, which has taken an enormous amount of effort to get in place. And we're basically focused now on getting the governor to join in our enthusiasm for both of these projects. Robin's case is excellent. Same thing is true down here. We're so used to cars, and the bias in favor of cars is deep-rooted and heavily funded, and this is what we have to overcome.
Brian.
I just wanted to add that the Red Line Now was the group organizing the Baltimore end of things, the Red Line end of things. And the idea from the get-go was to do this jointly, that the delegations of Baltimore City, Baltimore County, Prince George's County, and Montgomery County are stronger together. We have a lot of similar needs, transportation-wise and otherwise.
Exactly.
And this was a great show of unity. We had Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake side-by-side with Montgomery County Executive Isaiah Leggett. And the showing of strength together was very important.
So, Michael, I'm curious, what is your position on this? Because a part of this, I know part of the argument that's going on here has to do with jobs and who does the work and who does the driving and who does the repairing.
Yes, as Local 1300 Amalgamated Transit Union, we're very interested in the Red Line project, and we support it, and we want to see it come, because our job is to continue the advancement and growth in union jobs. And if we're able to have a part of the Red Line and be able to get our union workers in it, it's helping us to thrive and keep our union jobs.
Well, that's not guaranteed, is it?
No, it's not guaranteed. No, and so, you know, we've been advocating, you know, our president and vice president has been going, and also our president sits on the Red Line Committee with our guest here. And what he's trying to do, he's been advocating, but he's up against a lot of private contractors who have a lot of financial backing, in which it seems like to throw our bid, in which we have been with MTA for many years. And with MTA, we have had most of the work, but now it's a lot of it's being offered and contracted out to the private industry, and that's what we're up against.
So I'm going to get to the question of privatization of transportation and how that plays into all this, but what about the real issue here of money? I mean, people talking about the money just is not there. There's no guarantee of federal funds at this point, not with a Republican-held Congress. They could be cut. How do these rail lines get paid for? Especially now, let me stop there. Especially now with our new Secretary of Transportation in Maryland, but get to there in a moment. So how does this get paid for?
Well, let me jump. I'll jump in. We have a budget, a state budget that Governor Hogan introduced that closed the deficit gap, that includes funding for red and purple. He termed it that those are placeholders while his administration can complete their review. But there is funding there. Now, of course, in Maryland, our capital funding for transportation is done 6 years at a time. So these projects will take a little bit more than 6 years to construct, so there are a few out years. But we do have a revenue increase that passed in 2013, and there are some bills to repeal some of the components of that, but that does create revenue that will...
But is the money there for the cost? We're already seeing these huge cost overruns the MTA did not take into account. Because of their own accounting practices and not a lack of oversight. So, I mean, this is a lot of money. This is like, I remember 1970s when we built the subway system in Washington. You very clearly remember in Baltimore, they're deciding not to build a subway here, which was a really mistake on Baltimore's part. We would have had a subway system like D.C.'s by now, but we didn't. But then money was different. And then you had a different mindset in the U.S. Congress about how you fund transportation. So, I mean, I hear what you're saying, Brian, but Robin, I still question where the bottom line of this money is coming from.
That's a really good question, and I think the average American doesn't understand how these humongous infrastructure projects get funded. There are those who are more expert on transportation financing than I am, but from a layman's point of view, this is how it works. You don't actually have to have a $5 billion balance in your checking account to pay for a huge infrastructure project. And the fact is, and Brian can can comment on this further, but the fact is funds are appropriated and set aside. They're expecting that over time additional revenues will flow through and permit them to keep paying for whatever needs to be paid for, whether it's ongoing construction, expansion, operations, et cetera. So it's not as though Governor Hogan needs to feel that he's got $5 million in the Maryland State checking account in order to build these projects. It's not necessary. There are commitments of funding that have already been made. The Federal Transportation Administration has already committed to almost $2 billion to the state of Maryland to fund red and purple construction. The state's responsibility is to make additional funds available to fill the gap, and they can do that over time.
It's also important, I think, to point out that both of these projects are going to participate in public-private partnerships. The Purple Line has been established to the extent of about $900 million, or nearly a third of the project. And for us, of course, it's absolutely critical because the proposals for this partnership were due in January. They were extended to March as a courtesy to the incoming governor, and now they've been extended to August. And, of course, delay is a powerful tactic for prevention, and we're worried about that. But the public-private capital that is coming into these projects, and I don't know the precisely the partnerships being organized for the Red Line in Baltimore. I think they're a little less precise, but ours is quite precise, and there are four teams, international teams, who've been working on this proposal for more than a year. And to cancel the project and to tell this private capital to simply go away, we're not interested in your interest in this region, it would be a huge mistake. And we hope something that Governor Hogan realizes would be a huge mistake. Even the highway interests have pointed out that these public-private partnerships will be jeopardized for road projects as well if this set of proposals is turned away.
So, folks, I want you to join us here, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on all this. We want to hear from our listeners in Prince George's County and Montgomery County, your thoughts on the Purple Line. And our home base here in Baltimore City at 410-319-8888. If you live off Evans Avenue, the Evanston area, or down through the east side of Baltimore where the Red Line is proposed to run through, what are your thoughts about this Red Line? There are a lot of people who are saying it's going to disrupt businesses, disrupt life in those communities during its construction, because so much of it is being built above ground and not underground. Your thoughts, 410-319-8888. Because that is a question. One of the things I always, when we had these debates originally about the Red Line here on this program many, many, many years back, it must have been at least 8 years or so back or more that we began these discussions. One of the issues was that you're building a rapid transit system that can't be very rapid because it's gone above ground instead of underground. It seems the only way you can make a rapid system is either if it's up above the ground or beneath the ground. But when it runs through traffic, it becomes like the light rail, which many of us joke and call the snail rail, mm-hmm. because it just moves so slow, I might as well get in my car and go down 83. You know? So, I mean, that's...
Well, I think here's the question you have to ask yourself. Rapid transit is a term of art. It's also a term of the 20th century. I think what folks are expecting in a 21st century city is not necessarily to be teleported across town without any friction, but rather to move in a way that is less stressful, more direct, and more rational. Rather than depending on cars and rather than being dependent on all the inconvenience that's associated with congestion. So rapid, I'd suggest we not get too hung up on that. The important thing about transit infrastructure is that it gives people choices, and that's all that we want. No one here is going to rail against.
No pun intended.
But, no one here is anti-car. We're pro options. We're pro choices when it comes to mobility. And what people want today, especially in the cities that folks are flocking to, is the ability to move around on foot, by bicycle, on a bus or a train, or in their car in a way that makes sense and is easy. People also today are very conscious about their environmental impacts, and transit's more environmentally friendly.
Michael,
and also, too, if you've noticed the congestion of the upcoming Carmody and Fells Point and Canton area, I was a bus driver for 15 years, and driving that 13 line going into Canton, I mean, we can watch the light change there five times at Alexander Freak Street. So, you know, to me, the red line that will be able to go through there would be, you know, would ease the congestion because you would have more people being more perceptive to taking. And also, when you look at Liberty Road, Reisterstown Road, and Park Heights Avenue, the subway system, when it was introduced, it alleviated a lot of traffic and congestion going up and down those roads. And so, you know, you can look at the red line as will have the same effect for the east side area of Baltimore.
I just want to make it clear, too, that the Red Line does tunnel under a significant part of the city, and it tunnels under downtown, which is arguably our most congested part of the city. It also tunnels under Cook's Lane on the west side. It's in the median of the Highway to Nowhere, so that's, you know, it's not going to be
The Highway to Nowhere, since it destroyed those neighborhoods, will at last have a function it never had, but go ahead. Right.
Yeah, so the function being that it's not, driving with traffic, it's separated from traffic. In a number of spots along its corridor. So you're right to point out it's not the same thing as a high heavy rail entirely underground,
right.
but it's much more efficient than being in a bus in traffic or a streetcar in traffic. It's separated, and it is going to be different from the light rail that goes up and down Howard Street right now.
The Washington area really offers a cautionary tale for you folks. We have strangled ourselves in traffic. We're rated number one in the country for lost time to being stuck in traffic.
That's right.
And it's quite clear to us that the road infrastructure is just not going to work. We had a genius named Randall O'Toole come, funded by the opponents of the Purple Line 2 weeks ago for a so-called debate. His only solution to the problem was, first of all, he thinks buses ought to run in traffic, in contrast to the BRT system we're proposed in Montgomery County, where buses run a dedicated guideways. And then he also thinks self-driving cars are going to solve the problem. It's quite clear that something like light rail is the answer. Down here, the Purple Line, when it's on the surface, is going to run in its own right-of-way. It'll, of course, have to stop at signals, but it'll have the ability to control the signals. So it is going to dramatically reduce the travel time.
Say that again? The line will have an ability to control the signals?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Ha, interesting. That
so the travel time between, for example, College Park and Bethesda is going to be reduced by about 40%, and it's a one-seat ride. So this is a huge amenity that simply can't be duplicated with buses.
So, folks, what do you think? Folks who use the bus, I know one of our guests is a bus rider. Robin, you're a bus rider,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm consciously car-free. I trademarked that term. I became consciously car-free last September, having been car-free as a young person, a college student. But having had the good fortune to live in big cities where transit was an option, I never needed a car until I moved to Baltimore. And I survived here for almost 2 years without a car until I broke down and had to buy one. I'm a very grateful user of MTA bus service, rail, and I appreciate it. The quality of the service could be better. I couldn't survive without access to some ride-sharing amenities that we have in
Zip
the city
car.
Now. I'm not doing any ads for any particular company.
Wait, that is the one that's in town for the most part, right?
Yes, and it makes a huge difference. Those services fill the gap where MTA doesn't.
It's amazing the number of people I know, especially younger people in Baltimore who moved here and in D.C., from across the Baltimore and across the racial spectrum as well, use Zip cars. I mean, it's become this – it's an amazing new kind of – not just Zip, wherever the company wants to come, that's fine. I'm saying that – I'm not pushing Zip cars. But people who are car-free, who use our public transit system, and they use – these cars they can just get into and drive and drop off and back again.
For those who can afford it, it's a great option.
So we're going to take a very brief break here. I think it's time to do that. And Ralph, you want to just say something real quick before we go to break here?
I really appreciate what you guys are doing. There's no daylight between the Red Line and the Purple Line. I want to emphasize that. What we have here is a situation of the suburban and rural parts of the state being pitted against the urbanizing areas. That's what this election has done, and that's what the transportation policy risks doing. We're cautiously optimistic, but we'll hang in there together and keep the pressure on, and I'm sure we'll come out of this with what we need to have ultimately.
Ralph, good to have you join us. I look forward to having you come back as we really kind of continue our discussions and debates, which will be coming up over the next few months over with our new Secretary of Transportation in Maryland, over whether we invest in rails or road. Is it a contradiction? Can you do both? We really want to tackle that issue. I think it's an important issue to tackle. So thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it. We'll come back with the rest of our guests and a brand new one as we continue this discussion about transportation. Join us, Ed and Clarence, you're the first two callers up. We're going to come to your calls as soon as we return from this break. And on the way to break, we're hearing Sweet Jane by Mata Hoople, because Blue Weaver of Mata Hoople was born on this day in 1947. Rules of Perth, and all the ladies roll their eyes. Sweet Jane, Sweet Jane.
A little song I wrote, you might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and of course, that's Bobby McFerrin. Don't be worried, be happy. Bobby McFerrin, happy birthday. He was born on this day in 1950. We are here talking about transportation and the future of transportation on the Mark Steiner Show. We are joined by Brian O'Malley, who is president and CEO of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. Robin Lewis, a car-free bus-riding woman who's an international health professional and sustainability advocate and community leader and spearheaded legislative advocacy for improved transit and founder and former director of Redline Now PAC. Zoraida Maria Smith is with us. She is senior manager of development at CASA. Zoraida, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And Michael McMillan is on the local 1300 Amalgamated Transit Union Executive Board for Transportation. And you all are here at 410-319-8888. Let us go to the phones, as I promised first. We'll come right back to our panels. Edward, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
And hello, everyone.
Hi, Ed.
Good morning.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know that the MTA Citizens Advisory Committee there are three of them, and they have a joint infrastructure subcommittee that unanimously opposed construction of the Red Line, took no position on the Purple because we don't think that we should be dictating to the people of D.C., but generally people were supportive of the Purple, but not the Red. There were many reasons. One of them is storm surge flooding risks to the tunnels as it runs along Boston Street. Another was that the traffic figures for Edmondson Avenue showed that congestion would increase greatly. And those traffic figures were not redone and revised when the major overflow roadway, Frederick Avenue, was no longer had two lanes available in the peak direction because of bike lanes. Those were the two biggest reasons. There's also no crossover track in the downtown tunnel, so that if a train breaks down, only one-third of the trains would travel through it, and the other two-thirds would turn around and go back after dumping their loads, creating overloads on platforms. There was no safety study at all. And so we're very concerned about that, and we don't think that the project should go forward until too many questions are answered. It is also true that there is not enough money at this time on the books for the future, but there would be enough money for a subway extension over to the Travel Plaza. And it would require only 3/4 of a mile of tunnel instead of 4.7 miles and only one underground station to do that. We can't go both east and west at the same time with the subway because to break out through the west side, you'd have to cut service between State Center and Lexington Market. And you need a yard for cars on the east side so that you can serve the downtown stations before you do that.
Okay, and maybe it's right, only because you can stay on for a little bit and chime in here in this conversation. You're more than welcome to, because you do need kind of an opposing poll here, and I'm glad you called in. But you laid a lot out there, so that's kind of a lot for people to consume. But let me ask the folks here in the room here to comment. I mean, Zoraida, you just joined. Would you like to respond to that at all?
I couldn't really hear too well. I know for the Purple Line itself, we strongly support the Purple Line as it is for our community here in the Langley Park, the International Corridor, and in Long Branch area in Montgomery County. There will be a lot of benefits for them. We have a high ridership. We did a recent survey that 49% of our community members actually are use transit or are transit dependent. So there's a huge need for them to be able to get access to jobs, access to services, other types of accesses. In addition to that, the transportation will create thousands of jobs, permanent and temporary, in addition to what it will spur around the economic development. So there's a lot of benefits around the Purple Line and around transit period for people who actually use them. So we're hoping that, you know, we're strong supporters of both lines and heavily supporting the Purple Line at this point, at this moment.
So before we go back to the phones here, do either one of you want to respond a bit to what Ed is saying?
Ed is very knowledgeable and raised a lot of very technical, detailed arguments. I'll say that I agree with Zoraida that this is an important line. It means access to opportunity for people, and we're trying to find ways to build the best red line possible, not to stop it. And I think raising a lot of objections behind all that may just be a motivation to stop the project.
But if the objections that people like that Ed and other people like he are raising, if they have some validity, from the flooding to the infrastructure issues that seem in some of people's arguments to be very real, that wouldn't necessarily be an argument to stop the red line, but to think about how we're doing the red line, because you know, because people want it so bad, you're going to move full ahead, and then you have disasters after
right.
It's built.
Some of those questions about flooding and the design have been raised at the Citizens Advisory Committee meetings, and the MTA has been asked to address those and has addressed those.
You think they've addressed those?
No, they have not.
I do. I think that you know, we're not engineers, so there are many things we do in our daily lives where we're trusting engineers, whether we're driving across a bridge or riding in a piece of public transportation infrastructure. And I've heard the MTA say that they've heard these concerns and have addressed them. And so I'm not an engineer. I can't validate it myself.
Let me ask you this question, Michael, before we go back to the phones here. I mean, I'm curious how the union gets on this, because all these kind of infrastructure questions and how they fit in. There must be people on the side of the union who respond to this.
Right. Well, the union side is these are jobs that are created and which we hope to obtain when these jobs come through. Advancement for people that have been here with the seniority to move from bus transportation to the subway system to the light rail to the red line to be able to do this work. But and also as far as safety is concerned, the union's position for his union workers, safety is always the number one concern. And with that, when the subway was introduced, all the safety issues and concerns by MTA, we can say, you know, that much for them, that it has been addressed before these actual rails of transportation has been implemented. So I think the concerns as far as safety is concerned, MTA will address those. They wouldn't build a system into which they would really think it's deemed unsafe. And also, too, as far as the financing.
I wish I had more faith in our systems as you do about what they would build or not build for our safety, but their record is not great.
Right, but we would hope that they would answer, you know, the biggest concern, you know, concerns to that. And also, Mr. Hogan, he had an interview with Mr. Smith, and he said that the funding for this $2.9 billion project is already in place. The planning and engineering the financing on that part is complete, and he also said the construction was going to be ready to go. And also, we've learned that even the private industry that wants to join in for bids for this red line, they have been putting millions of dollars into trying to get this red line committee, you know, into the committee, into the planning and everything, and with hopes of being able to get this bid.
So I'm going to go back to the phones here, 410-319-8888, and I wish I was as sanguine about the government and private industry and what they do for us, but I'm not. I'd like to know more, just to understand, our listeners should understand it. I mean, I'm not opposed to a red line or a purple line, but I think there's a lot for us to understand here. 410-319-8888. William on the west side, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, William.
Good morning to your guests. 2 years ago, I went to London, and we took a tour of France. We left from St. Pancras Station, which is central London.
Mm-hmm.
We got off at North Paris Station, which is 320 miles. The train traveled at 150 miles an hour. It went through under the tunnel, which they built in like 10 years.
Under the English Channel, you mean?
The English Channel, yeah. Right, went on the English Channel. Right. And it traveled 150 miles under the tunnel. When we got out, we went up to 180 miles an hour. It was 320 miles. We got there in 2 hours and 10 minutes. We left at 7:30 in the morning. We took a boat tour of Paris Island. We went to the Eiffel Tower. We went to the Louvre Museum, and we got back to London about 8 o'clock at night. The same challenge would be to do something like that in New York. Leave Baltimore, go to New York, take a tour of the river, and come back and see if you'll get back at 8 o'clock. My question is, if you want to coach football, you find a coach that coaches football. So the Europeans have done great things with the subway system. Why can't we connect with them and say, how can we drill a tunnel underneath Baltimore for 23 miles or however many miles and get it done instead of saying one part above ground, one part below ground? And that to me is inefficient, because I drive around Baltimore, I see abandoned rail tracks. And I'm thinking, where are all these abandoned rail tracks? I went on Baltimore Street going east,
yeah,
and I see abandoned railroad tracks. What are all of those things? So in 10 years... The red line will be abandoned, or just like the highway to nowhere, we destroy 1,500 homes, and then they abandon it. They spend $9 million to break the ramp down because they didn't get a permit to cross the MART train station. I mean, it's kind of like juggling, but somebody is blindfolded and they're trying to juggle. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me.
All right, William,
why don't you find the most experienced people to do so? Like a doctor, if you need a doctor,
I think it's a great. It was a great call you just made. A comment you just made. Let's talk about what William just said. And I raised a question earlier about rails going underground as opposed to above ground and what they've done in Europe. He makes some sense when he thinks about asking the Europeans what they have done to make their system work so well as opposed to our system in America. And those rail tracks you're talking about in Baltimore, you see, by the way, just a quick aside, those are the trolley tracks that used to exist in Baltimore. There was a time in Baltimore before the auto and rubber industry destroyed our infrastructure of trolley cars in Baltimore. You could take a trolley by rail, slow, but take a trolley by rail from the west side here in Baltimore, almost in Woodlawn, all the way to Dundalk, and up above what's now Towson, and down to South Baltimore. You could go anywhere. By trans, those are the rail tracks you're seeing.
I think the accusation of abandonment really needs to be explored. It's incredibly judgmental and inappropriate in that it blames Baltimore City residents for the lack of infrastructure that we have today. There were policy decisions, investment decisions that were made before any of us were born that left us with a completely inadequate transit infrastructure. As Mark just mentioned, this city once had an enormous streetcar infrastructure. Baltimore City had more than 460 miles of streetcar. Why did we have that streetcar system? So that people could get from their homes to their jobs. We dismantled it. It's time to rebuild and reinvest in the city. I think the idea of an under-Atlantic tunnel between Baltimore and New York City is a fascinating one. It might make an interesting topic for a sci-fi novel. But for
sci-fi? It's not unreal.
The billions and billions of dollars that it would cost make it less than feasible at this point. I think the idea that was mentioned earlier, I believe it was by Mr. Cohen, that we should consider something besides the red line for our city right now, assumes that there's an alternative, and the alternative is often mentioned that it's a heavy rail subway. It's crucial to recognize that a heavy rail subway line that about the same distance as the current plan for the red line would cost above $6 billion. And I don't even think that includes the planning and design and all of the delays that would inevitably happen by the NIMBYs who would be affected. So let's get real. Here's what we've got. We've got $900 million committed by the federal government to build the red line under the New Starts program. We've got already the state of Maryland has committed $230 million to red line planning and design and preparations. As my co-panelist here mentioned, private businesses have already invested $8 million in their own planning and preparing to bid on the red line. So there's an enormous amount of investment already underway. Why start again?
I was going to ask you to do that. So, Zoraida, go ahead.
Right. Yeah, and also in addition to that, there's a huge trend around light rail, one, because it's more cost effective, but also if you see other cities in Seattle, L.A., Denver, Houston, they're just doing amazing things in those cities, and we want that to happen here in Baltimore and also in the Prince George's Montgomery County area. also, why the question was, why are why can these things happen in the international realm versus here? The reality is the P3 partnership, private-public partnerships, are the norm on the international spectrum. They're not the norm for us. And right now what we're doing and putting in jeopardy in these lines, they won't become the norm. If we want to really become transportation leaders, we need to start looking to the future. And the trend is P3 partnerships. And to do that, we need to have stability for our businesses to come into Maryland. And to do that, we need to be able to do that with the Purple Line and ensure that we don't lose the $900 million in federal money. We don't lose the $170 million that has already been put into the Purple Line planning process, and we don't lose those millions of dollars of private money already invested. So we have a lot to lose if we don't move forward on both of these lines.
She's absolutely right.
Let me just go to the phones here, 410-319-8888. And Ali in Baltimore, you're on the air. Hi, Ali. Welcome.
I wanted to say a couple things. One is, what's wrong with Baltimore's transportation is that there is no system. Like she's saying, we need, you know, there's only one light rail line. So in order to have a system, you need a couple of lines, at least, that connect. So the Red Line and the Purple Line are perfect. The only thing is that if the buses are any example, the problem, the bus line actually covers most of the city. It's actually could be wonderful if you look at a map. Problem is, they're scheduled an hour apart. You shouldn't have to look at a schedule to take a bus. You should walk to the bus stop. Bus comes in 3-5 minutes. So that's the problem. The problem is that they don't hire enough people to drive the buses. And I imagine that will happen with the Red Line and the Purple Line, that they won't actually, you know, pay to actually run it. So that's the biggest problem, I think.
Ali, we've heard this point before. I want to talk about this for a moment. Let's air this out just a little bit. And you're more than welcome to jump into this first, Michael, if you'd like. But one of the things I've heard, and you can tell me this is true or not true, that if a bus driver is sick or doesn't show up for work, then that bus driver is not replaced. That bus is just taken off the route.
No, that's not true.
Okay. But someone called in about that the other day, so I want to make sure that's why I'm raising that issue.
Yeah, not true. Okay. We have what we call an extra list, and we have operators on standby. And if the operator doesn't show up for work, that operator, more than likely, he didn't call out ahead of time, and, you know, another operator is replacing that operator for that run immediately.
Am I still on the air?
Ed, you are. Go ahead.
Yes. There is something called the cut and delay policy, an MTA document that was obtained through the Freedom of Information Act. And it talks about what you do when you don't have the equipment or the operators available to put the equipment on the street. It also mentions something called budgetary cuts. And they have to do with the fact that we have a schedule and we don't have enough operators and equipment to fill out that schedule every day at all times. And that's why we have this budgetary cut policy. And the MTA actually plans it out a day ahead of time when they have to make a budgetary cut, and they also make sure that they distribute those cuts in an equitable way so that they don't keep hitting the same line all the time. So we do not have enough equipment. So that's what the policy actually is. It's actually a written MTA policy to deal with the fact that the budget is so small and the amount of equipment and the number of operators that we have. We do have backup operators and backup equipment, but if several people get sick on the same day in the same bus division, we're in trouble.
That's probably true, right, Michael?
Right. Well, we still carry, like I said, each division, according to the number of operators, they carry the extra list. It could be anywhere from 65 to 25 people on the extra list covering that.
But would you agree that there probably are not enough operators and not enough equipment to make this place run the way it needs to run?
Oh, yes, definitely. Because when we look at all the work that MTA has been contracting out, they haven't been hiring more operators like this, the need be, like the caller stated. And if they were not giving so much to the private industry and giving more into within for the union jobs and these for the bus operators, which are union jobs, then the funding will be there to hire more operators.
Mark, I want to add that the you mentioned the streetcar network. A lot of the bus routes we have today follow the old streetcar routes. And anyone can tell you that the landscape of where people live and where jobs are has changed since the streetcars were here. We've got job centers in places like Owings Mills and near the airport that are excellent opportunities to earn a living wage, and they're very difficult to get to using public transportation.
Just means that public transportation needs to be expanded, whether it's bus or rail.
It needs to be comprehensively updated. And the MTA started that last year and haven't published the full set of recommendations for a comprehensive update. It also, you know, the caller mentioned the frequency of buses that you know, one buses running on the hour is very difficult to use. That does cost operating dollars to run a bus often enough that you don't have to consult a schedule. That's straight operating dollars, and those are difficult choices that the state has to make. But
Zoraida, what were you going to say?
No, I agree. Excuse me. What he was just saying. I mean, the reality is, I do think there's a lot of issues and kinks that need to be worked out. But to jeopardize both lines would be really irresponsible for where we've gotten. We can work with these issues. We can work with MTA. We can really create a better process. That's what we do. We really work. We ensure that the community is involved. We ensure, you know, the Latino community, immigrant communities, and people who live along the Purple Line route, that their voices are heard. But we're also strong supporters of the Purple Line because these are the people who need them, who need them for their jobs, who need them for their services, who will be riding them. And ultimately, that's what really matters. And then we obviously want to also ensure that they are engaged in the process 100% once we actually get the Purple Line and the Red Line forward.
Let me say what the biggest fundamental problem is that we have with money. State law requires that we meet a higher fare box recovery rate mandate than any other system the size of the MTA. The only systems that match it or are greater are Chicago, New York, systems that are much larger. But the second problem is that state law limits the rate at which we can increase the fare by a dime. We wanted a more rapid number of increases, once every 3 years until we hit fare box recovery rate. State law ties it to the consumer price index, but costs are matched to the transportation price index, which over the years has been five times faster. That means that we're trending towards a 20% recovery rate. We're required to meet 35% to get full funding. We can never meet it. So
let me go back to the phones. Let me just say as way back to the phones and then back over to Robin Lewis. Is that maybe part of the problem is the recovery rate idea to begin with, because the vast majority of people who use the public system are working class people and poor working class people who need that bus to get between their low paying jobs and back home again, and rate increases don't help the folks who are actually using the system, and we have a system unlike in Europe which is not funded or supported by the government, and they don't worry about that in England or France or Germany or Switzerland or Italy.
I'd like to challenge a couple of the assumptions you made there, and I know well-meaning assumptions, absolutely. But while it's true that Baltimore City has a pretty high rate of poverty, it's also true that Baltimore City has a pretty high rate of transit dependence. Something like 75% of Baltimore City residents do not own a car. I don't think that's a bad thing, but in any case, these folks are transit dependent, but there are many of us who use transit by choice.
But that's a minority of people.
It's a minority in the city now, but it does not have to be our destiny.
But Robin, let me just throw this at you. Just to challenge that for a second. I mean, because I respect what you're saying. I think there's a lot of validity to it. But as I say over and over again, there are 86,000 families in the city of Baltimore who are home insecure, which means they're poor. Which means if you multiply that times 4 or 5, whatever the number is, you've got 1/3 to 1/2 of the city of people who live in the city of Baltimore live in poverty. Those are the people who use the buses.
Those are the people who have to figure out how to catch a bus. You are absolutely right. The numbers speak for themselves. But I'm going to echo something that Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake said just yesterday. She made it clear that the red line is a jobs line. We are not doomed to have this persistent, chronic high poverty rate and human suffering in the city. Build the red line, create 10,000 jobs. We hope most of those will be good union jobs. If we do this right with leadership, competent leadership, visionary leadership, like the kind that is on display in other cities of similar size, both in the U.S. and abroad. We can make our transit system work, our city healthier, more vibrant economically and socially.
Let me do this. I do want to go back to the phones. A lot of people are calling in. Let's get another caller in here. I'll come right back to our guests at 410-319-8888. It's been a fascinating discussion here. Mario in Columbia, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing this morning?
Very well, Mario. Welcome.
Yeah, this is a fascinating subject. Since I'm a native New Yorker, I now live in Columbia, so I know the issues of transportation and how transportation is important for the growth of a city and also for its wealth. One of your guests mentioned something about funding, and unfortunately what happened in this country, especially after World War II, when we really kind of redesigned our built environment for the car rather than for public transportation, especially after 1956, after Eisenhower signed the Highway Act. And then we kind of reconfigured entire cities for the car rather than pedestrians and for mass transit. I always believe that it can be done. If Europe can do it, we can do it here in America. The problem is vision. Not only vision, it's not, you know, we talk about, okay, the funding and blah, blah, blah. I think that if we spent our money differently, instead of fighting wars and stuff like that, why can't we put that money, billions of dollars, into getting a balanced transportation system, which is what we really need? And when I say a balanced transportation system, you have pedestrians, you have bicycles, you have buses, along with rapid transit, heavy rail transit. The advantage of heavy rail transit is that typically it's underground. Its routes do not vary.
Mary, I'm sorry. We're just about out of time here, but you seem to know a lot, and I invite you to write to me, Mark, M-A-R-C, at Steiner, S-T-I-N-E-R, Mark at steinershow.org. I'd like to get back to you. You seem to have a lot to say on this. I want to hear your voice more about the issues you're raising. We're just about out of time here. This is a fascinating discussion, just the beginning, and I've been chatting back and forth with one of my producers here, both of them actually, but Stephanie Mavronis, about making this a regular feature on the program, because I think transportation is at the heart of our future. And we've had some incredible guests here today. I want to thank them all for being on the program. Zoraida Morea-Smith from CASA, thank you so much for joining us. I look forward to having you on for a longer period next time. Brian O'Malley, good to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
President and CEO of Central American Transportation Alliance. Robin Lewis, founder and former director of the Red Line Now PAC, good to have you on our studio. And Michael McMillan, great to meet you on the local 1300 Amalgamated Transit Union Executive Board for Transportation and 15 years of bus driver. Good to have you in the
thank
studio.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
And we'll continue this discussion. This is a very critical discussion for our community and where we're going. It's about the red line, it's about the purple line, but it's about transportation in its larger sense that we have to wrestle with, and we have a variety of voices today. And Ed Cohen, next time we have this program, you'll be sitting in the studio.
Okay,
so good to have you all here with us. You're listening to Mark Steiner Show here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And on our way to break, we're hearing Can't Help Myself, Destiny's Child. LaToya Luckett of Destiny's Child, born on this day in 1981. We'll be right back. Don't go away as we come to our episode, If I Were Mayor of Baltimore, with three Baltimore citizens talking about what they would have said, perhaps, in the State of the City address. Stay with us.
Once I got that feeling for you.